The Old Testament reading is from the book of 1 Kings, chapter 19, verses 1 to 9. Now Ahab told Jezebel everything Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. So Jezebel sent a message to Elijah to say, "May the gods deal with me, be it ever so severely, if by this time tomorrow I do not make your life like that of one of them." Elijah was afraid and ran for his life. When he came to Beersheba in Judah, he left his servant there, while he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness. He came to a broom bush, sat down under it, and prayed that he might die. "I have had enough, Lord," he said. "Take my life. I am no better than my ancestors." Then he lay down under the bush and fell asleep. All at once, an angel touched him and said, "Get up and eat." He looked around, and there by his head was some baked bread over hot coals and a jar of water. He ate and drank and then lay down again. The angel of the Lord came back a second time and touched him and said, "Get up and eat, for the journey is too much for you." So he got up and ate and drank. Strengthened by that food, he travelled 40 days and 40 nights until he reached Horeb, the mountain of God. There he went into a cave and spent the night. And the word of the Lord came to him, "What are you doing here, Elijah?" Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Would you please stand for the reading of the Gospel? Gospel, Holy Gospel this morning is from the Apostle John, chapter 1, reading from verses 19 to 28. The passage is written by Apostle John, but the story is about John the Baptizer, just to say, avoid some confusion. Now, this was John's testimony when the Jewish leaders in Jerusalem sent priests and Levites to ask him who he was. He did not fail to confess, but confessed freely, "I am not the Messiah." They asked him, "Then who are you? Are you Elijah?" He said, "I am not." "Are you the prophet?" He answered, "No." Finally, they said, "Who are you? Give us an answer to take back to those who sent us. What do you say about yourself?" John replied in the words of Isaiah the prophet, "I am the voice of one calling in the wilderness. Make straight the way of the Lord. Make straight the way for the Lord." Now the Pharisees who had been sent questioned him, "Why then do you baptize if you are not the Messiah, nor Elijah, nor the prophet?" "I baptize with water," John replied, "but among you stands one you do not know. He is the one who comes after me, the straps of whose sandals I am not worthy to untie." This all happened at Bethany on the other side of the Jordan where John was baptizing. This is the Gospel of Christ.
I'd just like to introduce and welcome along Tony to this service. It's great to have you with us. Tony is principal of St. John's Theological College. St. John's College is the main theological college training people for ordination. Tony has quite a broad background in ministry and other work, and is focused upon models of theological education. And actually, I'd love to talk about some of that at some stage. It would be great as we're looking at how do we do theological education in the parish itself. And in fact, also he's doing analysis of mission and ministry as it relates to the prayer book, the New Zealand prayer book. So welcome along, Tony. It's great to have you with us. And we look forward to hearing what you will be saying to us. Thank you.
Might want to leave the applause or otherwise till after this, you never know. Look, a pleasure to be with you again, and really I'd like to offer an infomercial to begin with. I was talking between the two services to Jimmy, and he was reflecting on the fact that most Anglicans across the world don't really know their Bibles particularly well. So I'm giving you an offer you really can't afford to not take up. St. John's College does offer programs for people across the province which have 96 people around New Zealand, excluding Polynesia, where we have another group, who do our diploma in Christian studies. And you can do that by either coming along during the day or Thursday evenings from 6 till 9. We do offer papers at night as well. So we're currently doing one around spirituality and the prayer book. And then moving into discipleship, so that's a 15-credit paper. Over the course of 3 years, you can get the diploma, which is the first year, level 5 diploma, which would then be the first year of you going on, should you choose, to do a Bachelor of Theology through Laidlaw, Carey or Otago University. So just to whet your appetite, and you're very welcome. We have about 6 in the evening class at the moment from across Auckland and 1 or 2 who come during the day. There's also block courses, particularly summer courses, and they're free to you because you are Anglican. There you go. Today we are in the midst of a series around Elijah, and Elijah's kind of quite important, really. We heard in the Gospel how even though it was a long time ago that Elijah was around, still he is seen as the great prophet. And they wonder whether it's Elijah who has returned when John the Baptist turns up. But where we're at is a challenging time in the story of Elijah. A lot has happened, and you will remember those stories that you have been covering over the last few weeks. This is a moment where he encounters discouragement. He has done a whole variety of things. He's been fed by ravens. They're all miraculous things, not just everyday events. I've never had any sparrows come along and bring me anything to eat when I felt a bit hungry. So he's been fed by ravens. Then the man has met with a widow and her son, and through his prayerful ministering to them, they end up with a supply of flour and oil that never dry up. Some people have testified to that kind of thing even in the 21st century. He miraculously brings back to life this widow's son when he is dead. It's the first example of a resurrection in the scriptures. There's the story that just precedes this one and alluded to at the beginning of that reading in 1 Kings, that he has just done battle with Queen Jezebel's prophets of Baal, and he's triumphed. They spent the whole day, these 450 prophets, jumping around, praying, cutting themselves, self-flagellation, and not a single glowing cinder turns up. He, Elijah, throws a whole lot of water over his sacrifice bull, and poof, up she goes. Miraculous stuff. And then amidst the story of desolation, right at the end of it, something else happens, an angel comes along, and there's bread and water provided for him as he heads off on a 40-day journey. And then he ends up in a cave. And Fraser was very clear to point out that I was not to move into that holy ground because that is his topic for next week. Nothing worse than someone taking your kind of sermon thing and doing an injustice to it or whatever. So here we have the ungodly prophets of Baal and our God, their God, the God of Abraham, Isaac and Jacob, the God of Jesus Christ, the God and Father of Jesus Christ, triumphs, and up goes this bull. So amazing power is seen in that situation. But here is this man in such a state that he curls up, I can almost imagine, into the fetal position, and he just wants to die. For goodness sake, all those miracles, and yet now he doubts himself. He is scared as anything because Queen Jezebel and Ahab are less than happy, and they're out to get him. And she sends a message. Watch your back, mate, I'm going to get you. So he's terrified. Has ever that been your experience? Kind of all these mountaintop experiences, and then we drop into a great kind of spiritual hole. And it often seems to hit me, as I said, at 8 o'clock at 2 in the morning. You know, you come awake and you toss and you turn and you worry, and the world seems particularly dark, and it kind of infests your mind. I get up now and I go and make a cup of tea and a bit of toast. So tomorrow morning at 3, when you're doing the same thing, think of me, pray for me, I'll pray for you as well. And we begin to doubt kind of God and God's presence in our lives. We forget that Jesus said, and someone said 365 times, do not worry, do not be upset, do not worry. And we forget too all those miraculous things that God has done in our life, and we kind of do an Elijah and we curl up and we're desolate, and actually we just want the easy way out. It's very easy for us as churches to have people stand up the front and give wonderful testimonies. And we can sort of end up in perpetual triumphalistic street parties if we're not careful. But the reality is that all of us are broken. All of us have had our moments of Jesus impacting on our lives, or we wouldn't be in this church today. But we've also known those Elijah moments. And is that okay? Because we can be left to think it's not okay. But the Bible itself is very clear that actually there is something about doubt, about wondering where God is. It is a common reality. Vast tracts of the scriptures cover this whole thing. If you don't believe me, read the Psalms. Read all 150 of them. And yes, there's some wonderful Psalms, but there's an awful lot of lament and where are you? Jesus himself on the cross recounts Psalm 22. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? Where are you? This moment of the absence of God. As Walter Brueggemann says, that feeling of complete abandonment of God, that God has somehow gone AWOL, that God is absent, is not unfaith. It is actually part of the crucible of faith development. And we need to honour that ancient tradition of lament that is in the scriptures as well. A modern day singer, I don't know if our musicians have heard of her, Catherine McFedries, who I only heard of the other day when the students had the Hear This playing in the background. And the words of, or the lyrics of one of her songs go like this. Life isn't easy, complexity surrounds me. Some days it's not clear to see evidence of your majesty. Life isn't easy. Complexity surrounds me. Some days it's not clear to see evidence of your majesty. Some years ago I worked with a workplace bully. And this person really got under my skin in a big way. And I think was out to kind of see me moved on. And that became really incredibly unnerving. I remember one night sitting on the edge of the bed, the torment had got to the point where I felt I was almost sliding into the abyss. Life isn't easy. Complexity surrounds us. Some days it's not clear to see evidence of your majesty. For Elijah, an angel suddenly woke him up. And there was bread and water. In my case, things eventuated and all was well. But I want to never forget the moments, the Elijah moments. Two things in that reading that I want to reflect on just a little bit. To talk briefly about some miracles, a little bit of angels, and then to what do we do when we encounter discouragement. Miracles. Who's experienced a miracle? oh, that's great. It's almost a miracle sometimes, isn't it, that we wake up. I mean, really, you know, and give thanks for good health and Aotearoa, you know, the prayers we've just had, remind us just how absolutely blessed and fortunate we are. Isn't it a miracle about what my body's doing at the moment, even while I'm speaking to you? You know, the whole thing of creation is miraculous. However, there are also these miraculous things that happen in our lives. As I said this morning, perhaps the mini miracles, if there is such a thing in our own life, happened particularly, or I often draw on them, when we went to Tonga. So I was invited by the Bishop of Polynesia to go to be principal of St Andrew's High School. I was teaching at Whanganui Collegiate at this stage. We went from a huge five-bedroomed home on a reasonably good salary to a little tiny, wasn't quite a shack, but it was a very small concrete block house in Nuku'alofa, and a salary that was compared to there, sort of down there somewhere. And in that time, God met our needs, because I think we went out essentially on a limb in terms of our comfort. And just two quick stories, two of those little miracles that don't quite align with sort of sacrificed bulls kind of going up in flames, but, you know, they kind of were for us. My wife at age 40 decided that she couldn't keep holding her parents responsible for not fulfilling the dream she had, which was to become a hairdresser. She'd been a school dental nurse, but anyway, she'd always wanted to be a hairdresser. So she went and did her training, and we bought a small salon in eastern Whanganui. Very humble little affair. Anyway, when we were feeling this call to go to Tonga, it was very hard to make a decision. So you draw up those lists of all the reasons you should and all the reasons you shouldn't. And they were about the same length. And you can always talk yourself into anything, can't you? So in the end, I rang the Bishop of Polynesia and I said to Jabez, I said, when do you need to know? He said, the 31st of January. So that day was getting very close, and my wife and I were praying about it. And then Gillian rang me up one day and she said, we're going to Tonga. And I said, why is that? And she said, well, because I prayed the other day that God would do something, show us something. And she said, someone rang me up this morning and has offered to buy or lease the salon. Now, as I said again this morning, who wants to buy a salon in outer Whanganui? I mean, it's just... Anyway, the other thing was we did get to Tonga with our two youngest daughters, and the 14-year-old had to do a certain entrance exam into Tonga High School. And she went in early in the morning and sat this and came out and said, Mum, we're going to be fine. And Gillian said, why is that, dear? And she said, well, the comprehension exercise was a Bible passage. Well, that's not completely odd in a place like Tonga where most people attend church on a Sunday. But the thing that was miraculous was that it was the Bible passage she'd done in her quiet time the night before. And so we kind of felt that we were meant to be there, and we certainly were. What of angels? Who's experienced an angel? Okay, a few hands going up. Don't expect to see something that's white and glittering with huge wings or anything like that. I'm told they get in the road. Just expect a messenger from God, really. And our youngest daughter went to England to go to Lee Abbey on the North Devon coast, which is a ecumenical retreat centre. She, in the end, married the warden's son, but that's another story. So she goes over there, and her mother said to her, you know, what are you worried about, dear? And she said, well, you know, I know it's right, but I'm a bit fearful about airports and train stations and things like that. You know, will I get lost? Well, she managed to get to Paddington Station reasonably well, but in Paddington, and those of you that have been there will know, there are trains in and out all the time, and they leave in different levels, and you have to walk sometimes a long way to get... She had no idea where to go. So she just sort of stood there somewhat bemused at the whole thing. A tall, dark gentleman walked up to her and said, follow me. And she had to take the train from London to Exeter, then Exeter to Barnstable, and then was picked up on a very tired Honda Civic. But this gentleman said, just follow me. And he picked up her bag and walked her to where the Exeter train left from and said, "Travel well," and disappeared. Didn't say, "Hello, who are you? What are you looking for?" He just said, "Follow me." An angel. They come in different forms. And kind of another sort of angel, we were a woman by the name of Lynn Scott, an educational person that was there to do educational strengthening in Tonga. We had her for brunch one day. It was the way we kind of entertained people outside on a very humble little balcony, and would give them a good coffee, hopefully, and a bit of fruit salad for breakfast. And in the midst of it, we're talking about my mother, who was had terminal cancer. And Lynn said, "You need to go back." She pulled out a checkbook, wrote out a check for a return visit, a return trip to New Zealand. I was able to be with Mum for the last week of her life, put her into the hospice, got back to Tonga, and she died the next day. So the blessing of Lynn was, do you want to call that just God's provision? Yes. Was she an angel? A messenger, in a sense, she was, because I needed to get back to have this last week with my mother. So, be on the lookout for, just be aware of the miraculous in your life. Be prepared to share your testimony, your story. It is encouraging for others. And just watch out for the occasional angel that might turn up. But let's just, for a final moment, concentrate on this discouraged moment that Elijah has. What do you and I do when we have those times of discouragement? I find a few things help me. I have spiritual direction, and a spiritual director is really helpful. I find my wife is wonderful. We're polar personality types. She's an excellent reality check. She either empathizes with great depth of understanding, or she tells me to get my act together and move on. I find the daily rhythm of chapel at St. John's is very helpful. We have services at 8:15, 12:30 and a 9 o'clock compline. I try to get to most of those, and I find that's another encouraging way to hear God speak to me. And I mentioned that song that I've read out to you twice now about God being there and the complexity of life. Those kind of things are helpful. And then I think, too, looking objectively at those 2 a.m. experiences that I talked about, I don't think that any of those worries I've had at 2 a.m. have ever either come to fruition or been anything like as bad as I imagined they were going to be. So, you know, physician, cure thyself. And you know, in the Compline service, we say these words: "The angels of God guard us through the night and quieten the powers of darkness." And life does look better in the daylight, doesn't it? Yes, generally speaking. I'm not wanting to in any way trivialise any tragedy, pain or difficulty you're going through at the moment. But two, we do need to face the reality that we're caught in a battle. I mean, the powers of good and evil, however you want to see that, and we'll all see it differently. But Elijah is facing the powers of evil in the form of Ahab, Jezebel, and Baal. And it costs them, and it costs them hugely. And perhaps one thing he does that he gets wrong is that he goes into a cave, he leaves his servant and travels on and goes into a cave on his own alone. Now, there are times when you're in a good state, perhaps, to go and be on your own and take a retreat. There are other times when you need people around you. And I've shared some of those ways that I find helpful. Isolation is not always the best tool to battle discouragement. We need others around us to support us. That's why we are the body of Christ. That's why, you know, I'm a hand and you're a foot and someone else is a head and someone else is the heart and etc. Someone's the little finger. I did once preach a sermon about the effect on an athlete when you lose your little toe. We do need all the parts of the body. We need each other, and particularly when we are in a state of discouragement, as he certainly was. Finally, don't get too depleted. I think that's what had happened to Elijah. He was running on adrenaline, And I've run on adrenaline. A little bit of adrenaline's good. There's probably a bit pumping through me at the moment to just be standing up here presenting this. But, you know, back in the late 90s, I was at Whanganui Collegiate. I was a boarding housemaster, the school chaplain. I taught 5.5 days a week because we taught Saturday morning. At 11 o'clock, I'd load the boys up into the bus and we'd go out to Powery Lake for an afternoon sailing. After we'd had done a bit of sailing and they were carrying on sailing, we'd had a bit of lunch, I'd be writing a sermon in the bus before I drove them back. At 6 p.m., I'd then be on duty from 7 till the last boy came in from movie leave at about 11:30, 12. I was up the next morning at 7 for an 8 o'clock Eucharist, then another 10 or 7 o'clock service at night, back in the classroom Monday morning, had 4 children. When I wasn't doing those things, I was in my capitalist phase, so I'd bought a few we'd bought a couple of rental properties. I was out wallpapering till midnight. Needless to say, the ambulance finally took me to hospital, and there God was able to finally minister to me when I was flat on my back. So there was me running in my own strength, and really that's not the way it's meant to be. We need to take a Sabbath, and maybe some of that's about taking that device that is so important to you and putting it to one side for a day, finding some space to just be your own. Listen to the words of Jesus from the Message version of the Bible, Matthew 11:28-30. Are you tired, worn out, burned out on religion? Come to me, get away with me, and you'll recover your life. I'll show you how to take a rest, a real rest. Walk with me and work with me. Watch how I do it. Learn the unforced rhythms of grace. I won't lay anything heavy or ill-fitting on you. Keep company with me, and you'll learn to live freely and lightly. Whatever you think of the Message version of the Bible, that's a great bit of poetry, beautifully presented. The unforced rhythms of grace. I'm pretty useless at getting aligned with the unforced rhythms of grace. And I add that that's what Elijah needed to do, and certainly what I need to do as well. And I think that was the bell that just told me that time was up. Let us therefore, came perfectly. Actually, the service sheet said 11:05. I'm 2 minutes ahead of time. Let's pray. Bless you, Max. As we listen to the life of Elijah, as we've listened to these words, what is it that God is saying to each of us today? Open yourself to the unique thing that God wants to say to you this morning. May the God of the angel armies strengthen each of us. Amen.